Welcome to Writers Talking TV, brought to you by the Writers Guild of Canada. I'm your host, Simon Rasiova. 11-minute episodes, 2 episodes per half hour, 26 half hours, 52 individual stories per season. And each one needs to be unique, funny, emotional, and finished 2 weeks ago. You don't get into animation showrunning unless you have ideas to spare and don't sleep much anyway. Today we're talking with the head writers and showrunners of 2 brand new animated series, GarageBand and Oh Notes and Alien Invasion. Both shows recently premiered to wide acclaim. GarageBand has 4 friends trying to rock their way to superstardom, propelled by the stolen lyrics from the lead singer's angst-ridden sister. And to tell us exactly what's in a teenage girl's diary, we have executive story editor Mike Kiss. In Oh No, It's an Alien Invasion, Nate and his Super Wicked Extreme Emergency Team, or SWEET, are on a mission to take back the Earth from the brainling alien invaders. And co-creator Philip Evanusik-Vallet is on a mission to tell us about it. Let's talk about the 2 shows. First, both shows just recently started airing. Mike, you're on YTV here.
Teletoon.
Bill, you're on YTV.
We're representing everyone today.
Right, that's fantastic. Yeah. Both networks. So why don't we start just, I mean, both shows, again, just started airing, I think, just in the past month, right? So let's just get the elevator pitch from you, Mike, first on GarageBand, because it's so new, I'm not sure everybody here has seen it or not. Let's just hear about the show.
Okay, well, I've actually never pitched the show. I didn't create it, so this will be my first attempt at pitching
the
show. It's already airing, so just watch it, would be the shortest pitch that I could give you.
Right, yeah.
But it's the best way to describe it is Corey Riffin is the leader of a really cool rock band filled with fantastic musicians, and he's your front man and absolutely cannot write lyrics because he doesn't believe in himself. So he finds it easier than writing his own lyrics to torment his emotionally variable sister, his older sister, Trina, because he realizes that her diary entries upon his rewrite
right.
Make fantastic song lyrics. So the show is basically their attempt to make Trina feel whatever they need her to feel, to write a diary entry that then they can rip off and turn into music.
Right, and it's 2D, as a 2D show.
Yeah, it's 2D show.
2D show, 2 11 minutes per half hour.
Yep.
So 2 quarter hour episodes,
mm-hmm.
Half hour package, and on YTV here, and also in the States, right?
Teletoon Cartoon Network in the States. We've been airing, I think, for 3 months, I think, on Cartoon
First
Network.
Broadcast in the States before
yes.
Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you want to talk about that? Do you know the reasons for that?
I don't know the reasons. It's probably something to do with Teletoon's schedule. But I know that it wouldn't surprise me if the desire was to launch an imported show, an acquisition on Cartoon Network in the summertime, just because probably they would find that less terrifying. I have no idea.
Right.
I have basically no idea why there's a difference in schedule. It is a bit odd, but it's done well. Like I know that the ratings are sort of hovering around 5.5, which everyone seems to be pretty happy with. But I have no idea why the staggered broadcast schedule happens.
Right, and you're executive story editor.
Executive story editor, yeah.
Right. So, Phil.
Yes.
Oh No, It's an Alien Invasion also just started airing.
It sure did.
How long ago?
I think our premiere was early August, somewhere in there.
Like, so congratulations to that.
Thank you.
And to GarageBand as well. So do you want to give us the pitch for your show?
Yeah. It looks like half the crowd like wrote on the show, so you guys all know.
Okay, wait. First of all, hands who here wrote on Oh No, It's an Alien Invasion? Okay, so no. There's,
wow,
there's
representing.
Probably 5 or 6 fans here.
Thanks, guys.
Any GarageBand writers here?
Wow.
Okay, so anyone who wrote on both. Nice.
Oh,
okay, so why are you? You guys already know everything there is. We're going to talk
some
about
cross contamination.
I'm not sure
thing.
Why you're here. Okay, actually, yeah. Just for a sec, we'll also do this. How many people here are Writers Guild members? Great. And how many people are not? Now we like you too. Applause for that as well. Great. Okay, sorry to interrupt. We just.
So
let's hear about the show. So just the sort of the elevator pitch.
Yeah, so Oh No, It's an Alien Invasion is basically Home Alone meets War of the Worlds. These aliens show up on Earth. They take all the grown-ups away, so they kidnap them and whisk them off to sort of a secret location. And so the kids of sort of the world are kind of left to fend for themselves. And then the adventure follows a group called the Super Wicked Extreme Emergency Team. And they have a secret base in a giant mall. And they're basically, their mission is just to try to find what happened to their parents. So they fight these sort of party-crazed aliens, and they try to, you know, eventually rescue their parents. We don't really deal with that in the show much, but eventually they will. And, yeah, we're just off. I think we did 40 half hours. I'm writing the sort of the season two finale, like, right now, which I should probably be doing that, but, you know, we got to... They'll never know, right?
No. You're writing in your head.
Oh, for sure, right?
This is research.
Yeah, and that's the show, and we had some fun doing it. So
now it's a 3D show.
It is, yes.
Right, versus Mike's 2D. So yeah. We'll have a 2D versus 3D throw.
It's an extra D. You win on Ds.
Yeah, you have more Ds. One more D than Mike.
Yeah.
Which is all that matters. And you're the co-creator.
Yes, co-created with Peter Rick. And Peter Rick was a co-creator of League of Super Evil as well. So.
Right, which is the show you guys did before.
Yeah,
this.
We did. Yeah, the one we did before with Devil LeBlanc.
That's right. A fun show.
Thank you. Yeah,
I wrote
yeah.
one of those and had a great time doing it.
It was
a lot of fun. I like that show.
Sweet, man.
You guys can keep on going.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's
and that was League of Super Evil
yes.
was for Nerdcore in Vancouver.
It was. Yeah.
But Ono is with Nelvana here.
It is certainly with Nelvana. Yeah.
Right, and GarageBand is with Fresh.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, great. So I think the format, we're just going to talk a little bit more, then we're going to show an episode of GarageBand. We'll come back, we'll talk about that, then we'll show an episode of Oh No, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit longer and do some Q&A.
Cool.
So that's kind of the format. I probably should have opened with that, but that's okay. So let's just talk a little bit about the first time you guys got involved with the show. So like how you sort of were brought onto the shows, what that process was, because I think a lot of people are interested in how you rise to that level or how that process works, how you go from just being a writer to being story editor, showrunner, co-creator. So maybe we'll just start with you, Mike, because obviously you've had tons of writing experience. You wrote on Splice with us. You've done live action. You've done a lot of work with Fresh TV before.
Mm-hmm.
My Babysitter's Vampire. Recently just work on Bunks.
Yeah.
So why don't we just talk about how you got started just on GarageBand specifically? Not the start of your career, but this project.
Yeah, well, we were wrapping up season two of My Babysitter's a Vampire. There was about maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks left in production. So it was coming up to early November of 2011. And Fresh was asking me about this new cartoon that they had coming that was going to ramp up in 6 weeks, sort of mid-December, early December. And they knew that I had done a lot of animation and just wanted to sort of pass the project by me and sort of get my take on it and meet with the creators, Mark Thornton and Todd Kaufman, because I had written a few episodes of Sidekick that Todd Kaufman created.
Right, back in Nelvana.
Yeah.
That, right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so he, I guess, liked what I had done there, or at least liked it enough to want to meet with me about the story editor job for GarageBand. And they knew that I hadn't really written a great deal of animation over the last 2 years. I had gone from their two live-action shows sort of back and forth. But
that was Really Me.
Really Me and Vampire Season 1 and 2. And they initially kind of, as it turned out, wanted me to take the job. I didn't know that it was a firm offer at the time, and met with Mark and Todd and reviewed the demo that they had prepared and liked it, thought it looked really cool and would be a lot of fun to do, and could already see that it wasn't a typical not typical but a gag factory type show.
So what did they have at this point? What were you looking at? Did they have written material or just
no? There was no written material aside from the pitch package, you know, mini Bible and whatnot. No scripts. It was a partially animated Leica of the demo that they had done.
Now, it was a demo. We're talking what, like 5 minutes, 4 minutes less?
No, it was a full Leica, a full 10.5 minute episode. What was their proposed pilot episode? It was a demo that was then augmented as we put that into the production stream. So I saw that and saw that it was going to be, a more intricate show than some that I had written for. their goal was to do a real board-driven series. And they were explaining to me the process being story generation, then going to outline, which would be a collaborative process, and then involving storyboard artists, the lead board artist, the two of them, myself and the writer, at outline to do a brief meeting to then, you know, further flesh out the story and really collaborate. And I thought, I've never done that before. That sounds really cool. It sort of sounds to me how you know, you get all of your relevant minds pushing in the same direction. That sounded really neat to me. So we talked some more about it, and I sort of agreed to come on.
As executive story editor,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they weren't quite sure what the credit was going to be at the time, but yes, that would be the job.
Right, okay, and that's when you started
yep.
at that point. Okay, so we'll probably get, we'll talk to Phil first, and then we'll go a little more into depth into actually the process that went on from there, especially with a show that's maybe more board-driven or aspires to be board-driven than potentially Phil's, but we'll find out. So, Phil, so
yes.
Obviously you came off League of Super Evil. You did with Nerdcore.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we sort of pitched, we were still, actually, League of Super Evil hadn't aired yet, so this was kind of a weird scenario.
Right.
League was, I mean, that was our first thing. We were still in, I was with Dav and Pete, and we were all, you know, in school, and we were doing the show.
Because you pitched that up at Ottawa, right?
Yeah, we did, yeah, at the Animation Festival, which was just last week. Which was amazing. But yeah, we pitched it there. And then that, you know, as we were kind of working on the sort of the first season of League of Super Evil, I guess it wasn't on the air yet, but, you know, Nelvana had sort of caught wind of it because it was sort of, you know, internally at YTV, they knew of the show. So we had, you know, this one sheet for, yeah, Oh No. And yeah, we sort of were, we pitched it to Merlan at the time, Merlan Ridley, who does like all the sort of the voice casting and voice directing for our show and a bunch of other ones. But,
so
yeah.
were you pitching it around, or was Nelvana, did you just take it to Nelvana, or did you try
no,
we
pitched it around. I mean, we had just the one sheet, and we, you know, we sort of had it with several sort of production companies and so on. But the sort of the situation we were in is that Nelvana was just willing to, like, they were like, we like it, we're going to sort of pick it up.
Right.
Which was felt bad for some of the other producers because they were like, "Well, we'd like to see more, but we don't know." And it's like, "Well, they're Nelvana was really interested in picking it up." So
they were interested right off the bat. They would option it at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what? Put some money down for a Bible for a couple scripts.
Yeah. I mean, we just kind of went into development. It was pretty, you know, considering development can be sort of really long. If anyone's been in that boat, I mean, I think it was maybe a year and a half. 2 years of development while we were still working on League of Super Evil. So
in a nutshell, what was that development?
We had a one sheet. That was like basically all we had, that and a little bit of sort of like a Bible just for myself and for Pete that we kind of, you know, had putzing around. But yeah, we developed a Bible. We developed like a pilot script. And then, yeah, I mean, that was it. And then we did a first animation test, which is basically a 2-minute, 3-minute sort of little mini trailer thing, then the show kind of completely changed visual styles after that.
Right.
But yeah, so
yeah,
that's
no, there's no broadcaster involved.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, YTV was basically involved right off the bat. I mean, we were developing it with Nelvana, but we were basically getting our notes from I think at the time it was David Weeb. So he was there, and yeah, we were straight with the broadcaster, and that was sort of a nice. It's really nice to have development with the broadcaster because I mean you're kind of, you know.
So wait, so what are we talking about? Like four years ago, 3 years ago? At this point?
Oh, I don't know.
It's 2013 now. This was when?
Maybe 2009, 10-ish, maybe.
10-ish? Okay, so
yeah, it feels like we've been
3 or 4 years ago.
Because we also, I mean, we started airing really late because I mean we basically had a full 26 half hours almost like ready to go when we started airing now, so
right, which is why it was important for you to rush so much during production, right?
Like we got lucky with air dates and stuff, but yeah, so yeah, that was that process, I guess. Yeah,
okay, so obviously your development package then was sort of a Bible, like a short animation test piece
that came after, but right. It was really just, I mean, it was really just, yeah, the Bible. And
so what point were you at when you got the green light, when they said, yes, let's do the show, we're going to pick up 26, or I guess they picked up 40?
Yeah, 40 half hours.
40, which is amazing. Which
yeah.
Is
well, we did the first 26, and then they did some stunt screening, I think, some stunt testing in April over March break or something.
Right.
April break, I don't know, Easter. And it did it well enough for them to go, hey, we'll get some more. But, I mean, I think we did our first writer's room before being officially greenlit, which was kind of, interesting. So that first writer's room we were all in, we just didn't know where the show was going to go or not. But, yeah, I guess they were confident enough to go.
Clearly. Obviously, they wanted to bring writers in that cost some money. They wanted to break stories. They were pretty confident of a green light. So you didn't have a green light, though, at that point.
Yeah, but it was one of the, I mean, if anyone's sort of been in that process, the sort of the green light process, is that you always assume that you'll get that moment where you can just pop a bottle of champagne and go like, yeah, we're making the show. But you don't. It's really strange that you'll just be like even on League of Super Bowl, I think we still have the it's full of, you know, dust and stuff, the bottle of champagne that we never popped, because it'd be like, we're kind of sort of green. Like, are we green? It's like, well, it's kind of a greenish yellow.
The best phrase I ever heard was, oh, you've got a partial green light.
Yeah, and you're like, well, yes, do we?
If that happened, there would be car accidents all over the world. Yeah, I mean.
That's blue. We're just waiting for the yellow part of it.
Teal.
Then it'll turn.
You've got a teal light.
Yeah.
It's kind of a binary thing, and yet producers and people are always like, it's kind of.
It's
green.
Just straight. You don't ever really get that moment to. I mean, I guess once it airs, you're like, oh, cool. It's on TV now. So I guess now we can sell. But then you can't celebrate then, because then it's people are like, well, now we got to make sure the ratings are good. So now you're not even celebrating, because you're like just anxious about making sure.
Did you actually have like a sort of a viewing party or celebration of the green light?
Not on this one. I actually slept through the premiere of the first one. It's at 8:30. It's like League was on at 10:30, and this one was at 8:30 in the morning. So
you didn't get up to watch your own show?
No, there was a reason. I think the night before was like, no, it was the day after my birthday, and we had a massive party.
Right.
And yes. And then I couldn't even crawl out of bed to do that. But no, first League of Super Bowl we had the big party. And
so, Mike, when you started on GarageBand, you already had a green light, obviously, right?
Yeah, yeah, we had a green light.
They had an order picked up, so they were sort of ready to go, right?
Yes, and it was our delivery date was well in advance, so we were under no immediate pressure. So we had a green light. No one was really worried about that. But it does feel kind of the same way. Like, you get to the point where you think, well, no one's told us to go home yet, so we might as well keep working.
The checks are clearing, so
yes.
We're good.
Yeah, yeah. So this was the only experience that I've had where you have a green light, but there's no boot on your neck
yet.
So it's it was a little different, a little more relaxed. That changed.
Well, let's talk about that a little just for a bit. So, because normally, often, a lot of shows, obviously, all know that sometimes it's sort of like go and you're already 2 weeks late or two
Always.
Months late.
Or,
so this that wasn't the process on this?
Not really. Our executive producer, George Elliott, had prepared a quite long production schedule. Mm-hmm. Tremendous forethought. It really gave us some flexibility, but there was a sort of... there's always urgency. Everything, no matter what your intention is, everything becomes urgent. And because of the extended sort of run-up time, I thought we'd be able to take what was conceived as a board-driven series, sort of pitch developed and sold based on predominantly visual material, that we would then be able to catch up with the written material, that I'd be able to, you know, sort of talk about the concept of the show and then prepare something on paper for everyone to reference. And that turned out not to be the case. We had to immediately start rolling after the summit, despite the lead time. If we wanted to preserve this kind of buffer, we had to roll. And of course, at that point, we did not know that Cartoon Network would be airing the show months in advance of Teletoon. So
right.
Yeah, when that happened, then we knew, okay, well, you know, so much for keeping our feet on the desk. We need to get moving.
So wait, so when you started the summit, when you started production on the show, you did not have a Bible, you didn't have a pilot script.
We had a Bible.
So did you write the Bible?
No. I prepared no written material in advance.
Right.
I had hoped that would be possible going into the summit. It turned out that was not the case. So it was the intent was to do a real sort of showrunner by committee, creator driven, board driven approach.
Do you want to throw any more adverbs in that? Any more?
No, but it was supposed to be, you know, it was Mark and Todd and myself collaborating to create what this, or sort of go from what they had created into the series.
Right.
But
and they were acting as co-directors on the series.
Yes, they were. Right? They were co-directors, so creator directors, and After the green light happened, it sort of became apparent that the true, you know, American style board driven approach was not going to happen. So then it became kind of a.
Now, why?
I don't know what the official reasons were. My only speculation would be it takes longer. Like
right.
that takes more time, which then means it's more expensive. And you might not be able to deliver in short order.
Right. So this went out the window.
Went out the window
it sounds
very
like the green
quickly.
Light turned on, and then that went out the window. It,
yes.
But it always seems like it does, because there's a lot of talk. Even
always.
Now, there's a big sort of – you hear it from producers like, no, this one's going to be a board-driven show. And the promise of it – I mean, I find the sort of the, what I think with the – I've never worked in sort of the American side of things, but when they have sort of the real board-driven shows at, you know, at Nick or Cartoon Network – They have like an actual staff of people in the building, writers
yes.
and the board artists, and people are there. Whereas I find a lot of times, I mean, especially me, I'm in Ottawa right now, but a lot of the writers that we have, we're fortunate enough to actually get them for summits, which a bunch of years back we didn't get that. I don't know, like it feels mm-hmm. like that's changed. So that's cool, but to have them and the board people sort of available and there, and I think it's you're like you have to kind of latch onto them.
Well, let's talk about that actually for a little bit. Just the fact that, you know, a lot of animated shows today, certainly in Canada, maybe, and somewhat in the States too, are not geographically unified in any sense of the word. Maybe around a city, but in some cases, like in Phil's case, not, because you live in Ottawa. The show's production was
in Toronto.
And now, were you the only person who wasn't in Toronto? I mean, some writers.
No, actually, for a bunch of the rooms, Dav lives in Montreal now, so.
Right.
So we had, you know, Pete coming in from Vancouver to Toronto, and then Dav would come in from Montreal to Toronto. And then the writer base in Toronto was the Toronto writers.
Right. So the show was actually, Toronto was the production side of it. You had a writer coming in from Vancouver, or co-creator from Vancouver.
Yeah, the sort of slash art supervisor, director kind of thing.
Another guy, another co-creator.
Writer. Dav was writer.
Dav was writing on the show from Montreal, yourself from Ottawa.
Yeah.
So did you, I mean... I guess just email, Skype.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's really. I mean, you do need some face to face. I mean, we still would come down. I think it averaged maybe once every 3 months or so. Whenever there was a kind of an important milestone, we'd go in. But after like the first like a couple of months, I mean, your director kind of takes off with it, and you know they take care of that part, and you know we sort of do our notes, and just stuff's on the FTP side. You take a look at it. You give your notes, your thoughts, and you kind
of. So, what percentage would you say of your work on the show was done in house on location on the show?
Oh,
so I'm going to say Nelvana versus somewhere else.
Oh, a tiny percentage. I mean, the day to day stuff. Like any time that I work with these guys and girls, we would we'd be over the phone, over Skype. There'd be the rooms. I mean, every like once we sort of break all the stories, we do it in the writers' rooms, but then the rest was.
Well, how many writers' rooms would you do during the course? So you did 40 half hours.
Yeah, 40 half hours.
So
we did, I want to say five.
And the show's an 11-minute show, right?
Yeah,
so you're breaking 80 stories.
Yeah.
And you did five writers' rooms, spaced out evenly sort of through the process?
It's kind of when we needed them. I mean, because I think the first writers' room, we came out and we just, like, it exploded. We just did, like, we have, like, 30 episodes or something.
How many episodes did you actually have?
I don't know. How many did we have?
30?
We had a lot. I think we had 20. I keep looking at Ben for some reason. Like, you remember,
Ben,
no?
Ben, how many? 30 episodes? Less
no,
than
we
30?
Had 20. Let's say 20. 20, 20,
11.
Yeah, it kind of, it sort of tapered
off. Yeah, it sounds like a dream world that I can't even, I can't connect to mentally.
Oh,
it sounds wonderful.
they weren't all that great, but, we got 20.
Okay, so what we're basically saying is like 98% of your time was spent in your own office.
Oh, yeah.
Communicating phone, Skype, email, a small percentage in the writer's room or in the studio.
A very important sort of 2%, but I mean, you can't not have that. It is a small fraction, but it, like, you get so much done when you're just face to face. You don't,
So, Mike, the same sort of question, the same setup. So, obviously, you're based in Toronto.
Yep.
The show Fresh is here in Toronto. What percentage of your time was spent working out of your home office versus working at Fresh, being in there for meetings to review things, to talk with writers, a room or summit? What was the process on this?
The process was summit driven. Certainly, I think we did. Four, although that may have been five. I think it was four, and we would do 3-day summits. and we were less productive than Oh No. Well, no, we came out with fewer complete ideas because our series had a fair amount of mechanism to it, so there were some details to be ironed out. The other side of that was that premises that came out of Summits that were, well, premises in general that made it through me to go to network and to be actually pitched, we pitched 54 stories and got 52 approved. There were two rejections. One of them was mine, so I was responsible for half of the rejection rate.
So your rejection rate is 50%, is, I guess.
Yeah, mine was, no, Simon, mine was only 20%. I did get several through on my own. I felt great about those days. But because we had so much to think about coming out of the summit, that's why things were so summit-driven. But that was, aside from, sort of status meetings and meetings with executive, that was the extent of my involvement at the Fresh offices. The sort of division of labor was I was running story department, and Mark and Todd were handling production. So there were no... I would review the Leicas, of course, and only really offer notes where I thought story or comedy were really impacted. I left that sort of... I kind of took my voice out of that. It was more their part of the thing. And then most of the time I spent sort of working on my own occasionally with individual writers to work through a pitch or some story issues and stuff like that.
So you would just meet up with them on your own, a coffee shop?
Yeah. Or a pub, depending on how big the issues were to work
so,
out.
So bigger issues, bigger restaurant, more fries?
No, bigger, more beer, more really, beer, yeah, right. For the heart of the issue, yeah. That's usually what it was.
So a writer working for you could probably judge then if you ask him to come to a pub, if there's problems with the material. If it's a coffee shop, everything's okay. If it's, you know.
Yes, but that hopefully was offset by the fact that they were going to get a beer out of the deal. So, I mean, me, I put up with headaches if there's... if there's beer involved, so I was hoping that the writers writing for the show would feel the same way.
Right. Most of them are here. We could ask.
Yeah, the lion's share or the tiger's share, depending on how you look at it, are here.
So you actually were only in the Fresh offices. Again, would you say less than Phil? Like even sort of
Oh, yeah, much less. It was add 1 day to every summit, so 3 days at 12. I was probably there just... on 15 individual days over the entire run of the show.
Right. Everything else was coming in via email, quick times. You were looking at stuff. And again, so you weren't generally that much involved with the material after a polish was sent in.
No, I always monitored. But I, you know, because of the intended board-driven process and because, you know, Mark and Todd are really good at what they do, I just sort of like, yeah, I'm always here, and I did offer a few notes, but kind of just let that process roll.
And I think you do, and I think it feels like, you know, especially if you're, I mean, we're kind of in charge of the words sort of. So the directors, I mean, they direct, they know pictures, and I think sometimes it can get tricky when you hear conflicts between story editors and directors. It's when either the story editor tries to direct or the director tries to write. Like, you know, sometimes we get notes from directors.
But you were co-creator of the show.
Yeah, you can kind of, you can throw that card in every now and then to sort of, you know, get your way when it matters. But even then, it's just, you know, it's still, you're trying to kind of get things done, right? And you do, you know, there's certain issues where you're like, you know, we gotta take care of this, or this is something that we feel strongly about. Sometimes, you know, it's still me and Pete, right? So sometimes Pete would voice something strongly, and sometimes I'd be like, you know what, we can kind of let that one go, but let's make sure we get this instead, because...
Well, the way you're talking, it sounds almost like the relationship between you and the director. And who was the director on?
It was Adrian Thatcher.
Was slightly antagonistic.
No, it wasn't. No. Sorry. I mean, this is just, you know, in general. No, we have a great relationship with Adrian. You tried to trap me with that.
No. So you hated Adrian.
No.
Before we came in, Phil was telling me how much he hated Adrian. I don't know Adrian Thatcher. I'm sorry, Adrian Thatcher.
He's awesome. No, actually, that was...
Mike hates Adrian Thatcher.
Yeah, I've never met Adrian, but... God help the world if I do, because I've got a bone to pick, apparently, that I've just invented.
But no, awesome stuff. No, we actually, we got to sort of, you know, talk with him and get to know him before he came on as director, and he just kind of got us, and we got him, and that was really good, because then we can just have, you know, our honest conversations when something wasn't working out for us or on his side. So sometimes we're, She's like, well, what do you need from, you know, from the writers? And that's actually, you know, a valid question sometimes ask the director. They're like, well, give us a little bit more, you know, less pages so we can add more visual stuff.
And yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great relationship. You just have to.
Okay. So how much did you talk with Adrian after polishes were delivered?
We'll get some notes, basically, for your, you know, premise notes, outline notes, first draft, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, basically, like, I'd at least try to make sure to do, like, a, I don't know, maybe monthly, at first maybe a biweekly call, like every 2 weeks, and then now maybe like once a month or something, just to, you know, check up. I mean, that's the thing that's important. When you're doing stuff like, you know, through the internet and through emails and stuff, you need every now and then to just kinda go, hey, what's up? And that kind of, yeah, works out, so.
And Mike, different relationship with your directors, with Mark and, not Mark and Todd, it was Todd and...
No, Mark and Todd,
Mark
yeah.
Mark and Todd, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they gave notes at every stage, and communication there was always valuable because they hadn't had that particular relationship with the story editor before. So it was really important to sort of poke, because I got the message from them, we could really lose a page off of our scripts, and say, oh, man, the last six I delivered were at that length. So that you knew that they were all a bit long. Like, yeah. Like, well, just, you know, tell me. And then now you'll get a page that you won't have to draw. You won't get that page anymore. And it took kind of an opening of a dialogue. Because to me, there's so much work to do that the way, you know this about me, the way I operate is just sort of get my head down and just sort of smash through whatever's in front of me. And
the Hulk method.
I don't know. Hulk's probably more efficient with it, but I complain a lot more. Hulk moan is not something you would ever scream. Mike moans a fair bit sometimes. But there's so much to do that you just assume everything must be fine because, again, no one is screaming. And that might not always be the case. So this is something that I learned as well, is just to ask every now and again,
yeah, for sure.
What's up? Is there anything we can do? Is there anything that's that we've written in description that's a bit vague for you that you don't quite know what we're trying to describe? Can I make it easier? Essentially, is the big thing.
Yeah, that's when that 2% comes in. When you actually do, yeah, like, over the phone is great too, but then when you do the face to face, like go out for, you know, like a beer or whatever, and then you can just be, yeah, well, what can you do to sort of make, especially a director and story editor, it's such a tied together job. Like, we could either, you can make each other's lives really that much easier. I mean, we're sort of entwined that way, and storyboard editors too.
Mm.
I think we're gonna watch an episode of GarageBand now.
Cool.
I think GarageBand's the first show up. So, anything you want to say about the show before we watch? I don't think you even know what episode we're about.
I do not. I was out of town when this episode was delivered, so I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, why don't we screen that first? And before we
it should stand on its own anyway. I mean, I don't want to be like, here's really what the show's about, because we didn't describe anything in the episode. It should kind of stand on its own. I hope it's one of the really, really super funny ones.
Which ones were those?
I can give you the numbers. No, the one thing I will say is that we, after the first handful, we really kind of hit our stride when we figured out exactly what the show was going to be. And it makes me laugh. I was rereading some of the older ones that have not aired yet, or some of the later in the production run episodes that haven't aired on Cartoon Network yet, and you know, we really got away with some fun stuff. Like, the show's legitimately weird and fun and kind of crazy, so.
Well, we'll talk about that once we come back from the episode. Just before we go, let's just, because we were just talking about script length and talking about that, so let's just, script length for a quarter hour. How many pages?
Like 16.
16 pages?
It's chatty.
Right.
Is that where you ended up, or...
We're talking the polish, like the record draft you went into record with.
16, 17. Usually, yeah. We started at 19. And
like, dense pages? Do you know how many lines of dialogue, roughly? Or
It varies wildly from... It depends on the story. Some are... But it's a talkie show, so...
Right.
We similarly started at about 17 and eventually came down to 14.
Did either of you ever do... it's something I do once in a while, which is after a show's happened or you finally have like a cut together, like, is go back and actually cut a script to time. Like, take the script that was used to produce the Leica, cut out anything that didn't make it on screen, and look at how many pages you're at.
I do it kind of mentally because I can kind of remember, but most of the stuff sticks. There's a couple of little things that get taken out, or it's action descriptions that'll kind of, depending on how they do a certain bit. But yeah, they tend to be about, I think 15, 16 is where we, for that show.
Right.
League of Super was actually a bit more than that. It was like 18 and it was 11. So.
Yeah, by the time we got down to our sort of steady script length between around 14 pages, it was pretty much all there. Of course, to varying, there were some sections that, you know, they wanted to take a bit more time with visually that then they would have to make up for elsewhere.
And you also had a song in every episode, right?
Yes, a song in every episode, which meant that our episodes would typically come in around 115, give or take, lines of dialogue, because the song was a good, you know, 40 seconds.
Right.
So it's one very long dialogue block. You know, we got a problem with line 118. That's three quarters of a page.
That's the song.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. Okay, well, we're talking about that more, but now let's screen the episode of GarageBand. Wasn't it? Yeah, just great, nice and so fast.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that those are 14-page scripts.
Well, actually, these are the first two, the first two episodes we did that.
So these are the first two that aired. So this is one and two.
This is one and two, and these were longer. So in the trimming process, a lot of material was removed and then sort of recrafted by the board team and Mark and Todd for these two specifically. So I think these probably delivered at like 17 and a half pages, which they found out were far too long for their for the animation purposes. So they had to do some work on it. And so it's interesting to watch these and to see, I've seen them before, obviously, but to see what was different in these episodes compared to what was written and what ended up being replaced with what and all of that. And the one thing that I got to point out here was you saw us create a character, this self-aware plant that could presumably feel pain, and we murdered it. That's what we did. Like, that was the whole point to doing a show like this, was to not...
inflict pain on others.
To not worry about stuff like that. There's one episode that comes much later in which I won't bore you with the or entertain you rather with the details. but Trina is the band has sort of set themselves up as sort of like superhero characters to play birthday parties and what have you. And Trina, and they've now developed some measure of fame, and people think they're real heroes. She is willing to die, like to set herself up to be saved by them, not be saved. And the moment where she falls to her death will reveal that her brother is a fraud, and she's perfectly fine with this. And the response to this online was delicious, because some people were like, I can't believe a show did this, and others were, this is just horrible. You know, kids shouldn't be watching this thing, which is kind of like, they already have. Like, is my attitude. Is like, they already did. Your kid already saw this.
Too late,
yes, basically. It's too late, and also, that's not a joke that other people would do. Which is why I love this sort of thing. We weren't really afraid of doing something like that. Although we did, when Lainey wields and Trina threatens to mulch the band, what I put in the script there was that what Craig and I had written was that they were in fact menaced by a running lawnmower, which you can't do. You can't, because a kid can actually find a lawnmower and turn it on, you know, and ruin somebody's day.
Menace.
Yeah. Right. So rake became the much safer option, which I couldn't understand.
It's
that
still
because
a sharp object.
But yes,
right?
and kid liftable, kid, like, yes. A kid. I mean, I was a tubby kid. I couldn't have lifted a running lawnmower over my head. It's probably pretty still. It's
Did you
still
going to
be challenging. No, you're right. I was a quitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love the fact that we tried stuff like that and just did it.
You look like you want to say something.
Yeah, right? I was curious because do you think that's sort of a the broadcaster sort of, because I know Teletoon and YTV have sort of very different styles in terms of sort of their core audience and stuff. And you think that might have been what allowed you to maybe have pushed things a bit too far? I mean, have you sort of seen the opposite where you're being pulled back more? Because I know that they definitely seem to want to push things a lot more.
Yeah, they do. It seems to be, after doing a few seasons with them on various shows, that Teletoon seems of the mind that if this is so crazy that it's obviously a television moment, they're generally fine with stuff like that. They're not afraid to do, you know, something a little crazier. They're not worried about the
murder of a sentient being.
Yes, the outright murder and consumption of a sentient
being.
Species
at this point.
Yes,
right?
That's science. At the very least, you get a look at this thing. Like, no, we killed it and ate it. They're fine with that. They're not really gonna. They didn't really consider the implications. It was basically, was my first instinct to laugh. Then we're fine, which was great.
Let's talk about that, actually, since you brought that up. So, target audience for your show?
8 to 12.
8 to 12.
I think we're a bit younger. We're I think it's like 6 to 11, and I think it skews younger, I think.
So let's talk about broadcast notes. Specifically in BSNP, which is Broadcast Standards and Practices, which are usually the notes you get about specific content. So not necessarily a story note, but a note about kids doing something imitatable, kids chasing other kids with lawnmowers, you know, the reason why you can have kids sometimes shoot each other with ray guns, or you have monsters with ray guns, you can't have them with real guns. What kind of issues did you guys run into with BSNP, right or wrong, on your shows?
Like punching, like, you know, face any.
So
blow.
not enough of it in your series.
Yeah, no, we wanted more. Sometimes, yeah, blows to the head. I mean, but usually they're not things that you actually will write in a script. That'll come out, like maybe a board artist will just draw something that's funny. But yeah, you can't. Yeah, blows. I don't know. We have blasters. It feels ours is kind of weird because like the world that the sort of show takes place in is kind of. I mean, there's no grown-ups, right? Like, so it kind of. It's a weird, it can be a sort of a weird sort of, you know, world, but they're fine with the kids living at the mall and just kind of just doing stuff. I don't know, I was surprised. We got very, very few. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head.
So the show has no adults in it. We're going to watch an episode.
Yeah, zero grown-ups, yeah.
You know, shortly in 10 minutes. Did you ever have any, was there any point during development when you had broadcasters being like, oh, they got it, let's
yeah.
get some
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, around. we went through it all. I mean, that's when you sort of, yeah, you got to sort of stick your gut, because for a while it was like, yeah, we went through. I mean, there's worry about. Well, we need to know that the parents are safe, and then that was kind of a thing that we needed to repeat. I mean, we kind of got rid of that because it was a weird thing. Because by bringing it up, then you kind of make people think about. Oh, that's kind of sad. There's no parents. I mean, you know, what about the babies? What about like, you know, all the, you know,
how will the human race perpetuate itself?
Yeah, and like and it just got, you know, but. The show doesn't really, like, if you don't talk about it, you're just watching a cartoon, so you don't really.
It's not Lord of the Flies.
No,
right?
It's not. No. They don't start to, like, you know, there's no conch and glasses and Piggy getting crushed by a boulder.
Right.
Yeah. We did do a Lord of the Flies episode, but it had nothing to do with kids kind of
murdering each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, we didn't. No, no
so
consumption.
Your show,
yeah. Oh, okay,
your
yeah.
show, less murder than Mike's show, is what you're saying.
I don't think we've ever killed anything in the show. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but so
less, yeah, 50% less. 50%.
So
less.
Well, I think we did 3 murders of something. No people
per episode
were killed. Yeah, and we did end one episode with we may have destroyed the entire town, and then just never really went back to that.
Right.
Yeah. But why not?
But let's sorry, just to pick up on Phil. So you actually had broadcasters. So you're pitching a show. You're coming up there.
Yeah.
You're pitching a show, and you're saying this is a show about kids with no parents.
Yeah.
And they're like, we love that idea. Can we put parents in it?
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't, like, yeah, basically. I mean, I guess it's kind of sneaky. It's like, it doesn't, you won't have that exact conversation, but it'll be like, well, what if? And it feels more like you can feel it gaining momentum.
Erosion of your.
Yeah, and then the boulder starts rolling. If it picks up too much speed, then you've got parents, and then you kind of, you know. But it was just more of like, well, maybe they're, like, on a ship on their way back to, at some point, they were on their way back to Earth, so you'd cut to the parents every now and then to show that.
Because kids love to see just parents off on
yeah,
their
be
own
like,
doing
well,
yeah.
something. We're, you know,
right?
52 episodes.
Oh, my God,
we're
our kids.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, it could have been, but it just, we were just like, you know, no.
That's, yeah, great.
I don't know.
We had much lower stakes for, like, the world wasn't ending in our show, but we still had that conversation of where Corey has a dad. We never really, I don't think that a mother character was never created by Mark and Todd, but we went down sort of the similar path. Like, if we if we show Dad and then kind of talk about him. Yeah, where's Mom? But also then where's Dad when he's not there? Why are the kids up so late?
Yeah.
So we just sort of thought, let's just not talk about it. And everyone was fine with that. The more, where did he go would have become a larger question than where is he, period.
Yeah, it's, yeah. It seems like I would think that either you want to not deal with it at all or you want to hang a lantern on it. You want to make it a big deal, like make a joke out of him being never there.
Yeah.
Right? But it's sort of that in-between zone.
It's a, wow, you're on the razor's edge with that joke,
exactly,
I think.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I guess a periodic text from Dad is enough to assuage Corey's terror. But our S&P process was largely similar. It was really just things that would pop up, like the, I don't love it, but it's the, you know, a kin trying to snap Lainey out of her moment there by whacking her, and then Lainey punching Kin in the face.
Yeah, there was no, like, whoosh, like it was kind of the sound effect.
I think that popped up. I was privy to that conversation. It was not a scripted moment, but it was, I was sort of obviously in the loop of that, and that was the solution, was to make it sort of more like a wacky noise or a little more cartoonish. But it was always acts of moments of if even wacky violence like that, which I don't love, and just weapons. That was pretty much it. Like we did a
like real weapons or sort of rakes. Like,
well, see, that's the weird thing. It was any sort of real a projectile weapon or a bladed weapon. Like you could never use a sword, but the rake was fine. When I said rake, I thought, you know, it would be the fan type kind of delicate. Rake,
not the hook.
Not you could. You wouldn't be able to get purchase with the rake that I had imagined. It would be sort of twang and like that's kind of charming, but like that kind of rake, you're not getting
you're
up.
You're not twanging.
No, yet. Like that's a you're doing some serious raking with a rake like that.
That's a one-hit rake.
Yeah, it's a one-hit rake. Yeah. So it was really just weapons and.
But
and
they had knives
like that.
In that scene too. They had knives. They come up with knives.
When yes, but it was always the. Were you menacing another person with something like that? Like it was. They're chopping up plants and everything. Apparently that stuff sort of slipped past. Once Cartoon Network got involved, their S&P process was a little more insistent. So we had moments like that we had to. There was one hilarious episode that we did toward the end of the run involving mimes, and they were miming. Just the idea was pitched of them just sort of doing a mime drive-by.
A mime-by?
Yeah, and the... really wanted to do this was just them like sort of you know the mimes miming and like the band kind of you know taking a hit to realize wait a second the whole thing is that the miming was real, these mimes could actually do stuff, and there'd like be like a you know bullet hole on the wall behind or in a tree behind one of the characters, and they just said we don't even want you know the hand the universal gun hand whatever you want to say about that. I can't even, wow, a hell of a writer.
So the notes worked. Clearly, you can't even talk about it at this point.
Yes, it was redacted. My dreams were redacted. But then, it was always that. It was always just violence.
So let's quickly just go into that for a sec. So you had Cartoon Network came on after Teletoon.
Mm-hmm.
What point in the process did they come in? Like, how many scripts did you already have? Did you have to go back? Was it an acquisition? Did they just buy
it? It was an acquisition, but there were, you know, requests that were made from S&P that you do your best to. Some of them you just take outright because they're, you know, the acquisition or whatever is contingent upon certain things, and some of them were just were nice requests that we accommodated. Of course, it was never just a we'll cut that. It was I always love to replace it with something, not just kill this joke entirely. We'll give you something else. Is this okay? And they were about, I'd say a quarter of the way through, they acquired the show. And then S&P got caught up. They were just sort of burdened with other projects. And then we started to get real S&P maybe 40% of the way through.
Right. So were you going back to revise scripts or was it all
never had to
the board stage?
Yeah, it was all visual things that could be handled by the board crew. There was nothing that required any rewrites.
So they didn't come back to you to even ask you to sell the problem. That was the board artists just subbed in whatever they thought.
Oh, no. The notes would come to me, but there was never anything that required anything more than an email to production
right.
asking, can you handle this? Is there anything that needs to be actually rewritten. And there wasn't anything major, largely because, you know, we'd all worked with these folks before, so we kind of know what their buttons are. Like guns. We don't make a lot of gun
rakes,
jokes.
So rakes are fine.
Rakes are, yeah. Lawnmower is funnier, and no kid's going to swing a running lawn. Like, that was my thing. Was like, the lawnmower is kind of, yes, far more devastating, but not... It's certainly less accessible. You know, I'm really on the soapbox about this lawnmower thing.
Now, please, let's.
It would just, this is never going to happen.
Let's get it all out. All your feelings about lawnmowers
thing.
And rakes.
You know, it's if she showed up with a train, kid's never going to get a train.
It's mostly yard work is your button here.
Yeah, actually, I never thought of it like that before, but that's pretty much it. I find lawn tools broadly hilarious. Like, I sort of do. Like, nothing's... If you're, shovel beats baseball bat. Like, if you're gonna see a cartoon dog get walloped by something, shovel's a lot funnier.
Yeah.
Quote me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's well, it's a foghorn leghorn pounding that dog on the bottom with a 2x4. It's amazing. Where have you gone, foghorn leghorn, is my question.
Just before we watch your episode, let's just talk briefly about actual the process, just some of the concrete stuff about actually episodes running in from pitching an idea to eventually the final episode and the involvement of you guys and the writers along the way. So do you want to start, Phil? So you start at one of your summits, obviously, in most cases. Were people pitching between summits,
too? It's kind of a, you know, it kind of do a catch-all. Because the thing that's great about summits is you get a bunch of people in a room together. We can sort of familiarize everyone with the process, but what sort of the drawback of a room is that you also sometimes you want to meet new writers, you want to try and give new people a shot, and you don't necessarily want if it's someone that's just starting out or something, you might not say, hey, come to the room, and then it's more of a gamble. So
how many people were in your room?
Like four other writers, 4 to 5 other writers. So there'd be me, Pete,
three of you, right?
No. Other sort of, there'd be sort of four writers, then myself, Pete, our director, producers, network dudes, and.
And you picked all the writers at this point.
Yeah. They were all like people that either you sort of meet beforehand, or that had worked on League of Super Evil with us, or just people that you just kind of know that would get along in a room together, or that would sort of fit that sort of dynamic thing that you need. You need people that talk, and you need people that. You know, could be sort of funny on the spot, but people that also feed other people's ideas, blah, blah, blah.
So. Right, so you'd all pitch, talk about the stories right there with the director, mm-hmm. and it's you said the broadcasters, too?
We had...
David Wieben there?
At that point it was Matt Sheppo.
Matt Sheppo, right,
Matt
Sheppo. Okay.
So he was there for, the sort of the bulk of it. So.
You spent like a day or two? Or
two days in the room, and then we sort of hash out, our basic... We didn't break down things. I mean, we didn't have sort of a more structural thing, so we just would... we'd get a sort of beginning, middle, end, roughly, and then sort of the writers would take that, write a premise. Usually I'd get on the phone with them, and we sort of hash out the beats a little bit more.
So everyone left the summit with couple ideas
premises,
that had been broken out in the room.
Yeah.
So premises, but not written up as premises at this point. Sort of just
just it's like, yeah, we've got, you've got basically titles with like kind of little, beats of it, and then they'd go off and they'd...
They would come back to what? A page?
Usually premises are a page and a half, single spaced. So you beginning, middle, end, prose style, no slug lines or anything. Just
And you would you talk about it on the phone with that
writer
or something?
Yeah, and then what I typically do that might not be, I don't know, I didn't know if that was sort of the way to do it or not, but writers would submit those premises to me. I take a look at it, do my quick sort of story editor's notes, send that right back to them before even sending it to broadcast. So it would sort of take a pass before broadcast, because then... I kind of knew what they would, what the director or the broadcaster would sort of harp on, so I could kind of save them the trouble of having the giant page of broadcast notes, so I can just sort of send my, tiny notes, do a couple of tweaks, send it off, get it approved, and then move to the outline.
Okay, so then that would go in, that would get approved by YTV.
Yeah, YTV and all
that. By Matt Sheppo, YTV.
Yeah.
By your director.
Yeah.
Obviously, your creative people. I mean, they at that point... It wasn't a surprise to anybody, because they'd obviously...
That's the good thing about having the writer's room, is that they kind of sign off on it in the room, so they're not like...
This is the one about the dog and the 2x4.
Yeah, and they'll be like, yeah, that's great. Yeah, you don't surprise... Sometimes when you get external pitches, then there might be some surprises, and then I still vet the springboard before, so they kind of... I don't like to surprise them with a full 2-page just to find out that, oh, that first word, yeah, that's not going to go. Like, usually sometimes there'll be just that one thing that'll switch them off on the story. So
then that would get approved, obviously. Yep. Then you're going to an outline,
yes.
Right? So this process, you would talk, because there's not another summit necessarily coming up.
No. Once we've got the premises, or at least the springboards, that's kind of, you know, that's no more summits. So, yeah, the premise would get approved. Typically, at first, once the writers got familiar with the show, we didn't have to break down things as much, but I get on the phone with them. We talk about the outline, sort of, okay, well, you know, kind of this would happen. You know, we're just slugging it out, and then they go off. They take their sort of first pass at it. Same sort of process. I take a look at it before, say, okay, cool, let's just tighten this up. Let's do this. Let's tweak that. They kind of take care of that on their own, and then send it back to me. Then I send that off to
right.
Network.
So you're looking at page and a half. You were saying page to page and a half
for the premise,
right?
Yeah.
Which is gets you a lot on
yeah,
the page.
Yeah, tons. I mean, just the whole, it's all there. I think it's the more sort of heavy lifting you do up front before getting to the draft. It's like you don't get we never have to rewrite a draft. And I find if you skip through some of the steps, that's when you get to rewrite City, and that's just it's a pain in the butt.
Nobody wants to get a rewrite.
No, it's awful.
It's not nice there.
So yeah, and then five page sort of outline with slug lines.
Okay, so you would actually slug it out.
Outline is slugged out. It's in final draft. It's all ready to go. And then basically, what's great is that once you get your outline approved, when you go to draft, and you've got some dialogue already in your outline. Usually, then writing the draft you can kind of bang out a draft.
Okay, so usually
in a couple of days,
just one pass on the outline would do it once it would get approved.
Generally.
You'd go back to the writer with notes. Obviously, there'd be some notes sometimes or sometimes.
Yeah,
not.
Yeah. I mean, usually when we get outline notes from broadcaster and stuff, it'll be like, you know, tweak this joke or whatever. So it'll be kind of pretty minimal. Or if there was like a bigger sort of story structure thing, that's when I'd get on the phone with either the broadcaster. I kind of save the writers the headache.
Who's giving notes here? You're giving notes, obviously. YTV is giving notes.
Yeah, and the sort of the director / Nelvana entity. So the whole, the studio would. And that's usually like, especially on a CG show, it's, you know, it's production viability notes, sets, props, things. It's really different. That's, you know, that extra D in 3D is just basically
demanding.
You can't you can't do a lot of stuff.
We're talk actually about that a little further in a sec. So anyway, so you do draft the outline, then you come in, they deliver first draft the script and final draft.
Usually, what's cool about this process is that typically after the first draft, very very rarely, unless we got really busy and I could sort of handle the second draft and the polish, the writers wouldn't really have to do much after the first draft because it was just. We're talking about a couple of punch-up lines, and you know.
Oh, great! Okay.
Yeah, so it was pretty.
So it was rare that you had any serious work to do to a script after.
Yeah, every now and then there's like sometimes it happens, but
you can name names here. It's okay. Yeah, it's a safe environment.
No, it was that good. It was cool. It was really, you know, it was very.
Right. So
good process.
Second draft, a polish.
Yep.
And then kind of it was.
And then it's hopefully a done deal if all goes well. So.
Right, Mike. Same question.
Some similarities. Some. Large differences. Our summits were a must. As we had a show with a lot more, as you could see, real tent poles, structural tent poles, being what's Corey's vision for the band here? How does Trina decide to destroy it? What does he do to react to that? And then how do we drag the two of them along so that he can manipulate her to provoke her diary freak out? So that's a lot. And in summits, we had Mark and Todd and broadcaster there. Usually,
who from Teletoon?
Teletoon. It was Athena initially, right before she, went on maternity leave, and then Oog came on with our second summit. He also goes by Hugh, which I attempt to pronounce his name, but it never really. He just said, "Just call me Hugh." Every time I see the guy.
But you kept doing it.
Yeah, well, I kept trying, like not as a jerk. I really wanted to get it right, but I couldn't. No. Just inept. I wasn't outwardly being a jackass about it. It just happened to sound that way. And Chapman Maddox was our representative from Fremantle, was our distributor. So, and then when Cartoon Network acquired the show, their notes and everything was sort of filtered through him. So we didn't have any real communication. I didn't directly with Cartoon Network. So,
so Cartoon Network, when they were sending in their notes, mm-hmm. those notes went to Fremantle first.
Yes.
And then came to you.
Yeah.
Now, was he forwarding emails on? Was he collating?
No, he was collating and streamlining. So if they had, I wouldn't get the same note twice. If he, if they had a thought and Cartoon Network had a request, they would just sort of get combined. So that was great to not have two external voices to deal with rather than three. Anytime you can streamline that, it helps. So we would develop the premises in the summits. It would take longer. We never came out of it with a mm-hmm. It wasn't as simple because we had to figure out how the mechanism would work, because especially early on, we were still trying to the early days of the show didn't go as
well. Did you know all that
planned
going in? Did you know when you first started we were going to have that kind of format, like that tentpole, the problem, you know, the diary, the song? It's sort of that. It's not a formula, but it's sort of a setup, payoff.
It's definitely a structure. Yeah.
Right.
No, it wasn't entire. It wasn't the same. We got some feedback initially. It was really going to be what's the band's issue? What's the gig? What's the gimmick they're trying to do? And then how do they manipulate Trina in order to get the lyrics they need? And then there was some thought about, well, you're really just hinging the emotional story on a character who isn't your protagonist at that point. And it becomes, the sort of Mess with Trina show. And the solution, which I knew would be more complicated, but less flatly repetitive, was to make her sort of an active antagonist, like make her kind of a villain, which then makes your story really kind of like an 11-minute procedural. But
so she wasn't a villain originally on. She was just a sister.
Yeah, she was someone who just couldn't stand her nerdy brother and didn't have an active role in trying to stop him from making music. It was just, you know, leave me alone, and would kind of get dragged into. We were going to create a situation in which she would always sort of be present for them to utilize. But it's just not that much fun. Everything seems a little more convenient.
Well, there's less conflict.
There's much less conflict that way, which, you know, you end up really just telling the same couple of stories again and again. It's where do we want to go? What kind of hat are we going to wear? How do we goof with her to make the... And it was really dependent, and it looked like it was, based on these two episodes, really dependent on how she felt about Nick Mallory and how you use Nick Mallory against her. We sort of got away from that in a lot of ways as we... It was always sort of a theme, but it wasn't as dependent on, you know, who she has a crush on, which, you know, seemed like a crutch that we didn't want to lean on too heavily with every episode. So that caused some changes, but then, you know, I said, man, it would be great to write one like that first, so all the writers can see that. It's like you wouldn't ask animators to draw a character without a design.
Yeah.
And we were kind of in the position where, you know, we had to write scripts without a template. And that slowed us down at first.
So, no pilot. Okay, so obviously those were the first two episodes we saw. What did they see? Because he had you guys had an animatic or a Leica, mm-hmm. or Todd and Mark did.
Yep.
But that's not what we saw.
Turned
into those episodes.
No,
it's a completely separate thing.
Yes, because once this happened, and we knew we couldn't. I would have loved it, but we couldn't stop the process for 2 weeks to create that material.
Right.
Which of course then cost us more time as things go on. The money you spend, the time you take up front, is always less than it will eventually cost you if you let it roll.
Right.
So we knew that we'd really have to pay a lot of attention. There'd be a lot of rewrites the first handful. So we slotted in that one, which is already boarded and at Leica stage. At episode 6, so we could buy ourselves that week and a half to 2 weeks in production, and we could sort of use that as a cushion to run into it.
Okay, so let's get back to the room. So mm-hmm. you had a room. How many writers in the room?
Initially, well, we would vary between 6 and 8.
6 and 8, because it wasn't always the same writers in every summit.
It wasn't the same, no. There were some people who were no longer in town who were writing, and some who had a real solid grasp of the show, and... the thinking was, let's just open it up a bit and get some other people to come in. And it was a mix of folks who I really wanted and folks that were other people's.
Right. So the room, you didn't necessarily, you populated some of the room with people you liked.
Most of it, yeah.
Right. And then there's some other people that were suggested by who the broadcaster, by Mark and Todd.
And nobody, I never objected to anyone. Like,
right.
Everyone was, it wasn't like, well, if you're, your crony comes in, I get to pick somebody too. It wasn't that sort of thing. Yeah, everybody was, everyone was really great.
And then you would break stories, similar to how it
worked. More detail, of course. And the difficulty at first was, which was slowing us down, was if we couldn't find one section that we needed. And eventually I kind of convinced everyone that that's what the subsequent stages of script development
the outline.
Yes, right. Yeah, the detail, that's usually what a good 5-page document will provide. And that's where we got to. But the outlines were slugged out and everything as well.
So that came up a lot. You had problems with premises where people were like, well, I'd like to see more detail. What happens here?
It was a sort of a wait. What about this thing? And like, well, I don't know yet. Like, we just talked about this. There's enough here to go to outline with. Let's go, because that's part of the writer's job, too. You ask them for that stuff when they're not working for free. That's my thing. It was always the kind of, as soon as we, can we get more out of them before we green light this? And I'm like, no, you can get that out of me. Like, we can talk about it because you're paying me. But I'm not going to go back to someone and say, I like 50% of this, which ended up kind of happening from time to time. But it was always through me saying, this isn't ready to go forward yet. And as soon as we had enough details to go to outline, I just kept shoving, like, let's go.
So premise was a page.
Yeah, it ended up being a page. I mean, everything was kind of heavy at first, a page and a half. But because there were so many details to work out, it ended up being a page and
right.
a half.
Yeah. Now, did you have the same thing? Did you find the same? You had people asking for much more material from the writers?
No. Usually we had it. I mean, because, again, for the same reason that sort of Mike brought it up, you know, you don't want to, as a writer, it kind of sucks when you have to do a lot of work before getting the gig, so I try to, you know, limit, again, Springboard's super short, so they don't have to spend as much time on it. And just hopefully, you know, once we get the premise, and if the premise doesn't work, then hopefully try to find a way to find a premise to get them to work on something. It's meritocracy. Sometimes it's not the writer's fault, it's just the episode's just not working, and then it's still based on merit, but you know, if you fight for something, you do a really good job on a premise, but it doesn't happen to fit for whatever reason.
Right.
You just.
So, Mike, very quickly, let's finish off your process, and then we'll watch those episodes.
Briefly, the issue that we had primarily was just getting an actual nugget that worked, because we didn't
nugget.
Yeah, we didn't have a show about a band. We had a structured show that needed certain things. So there were a lot of freelancer pitches that just didn't go through because you could tell sometimes that it was just maybe the band does this. Like, no, that lacks 60% of what our show is. But once things got passed on at premise stage, things tended to move through the process pretty quickly.
Right, so not many things dying after an approved premise.
I would always resist killing something. It would just be, what? Why does this need to die completely? And we had one of mine that got stopped because of...
At what stage?
At outline stage, because there were two other stories that had been pitched to me that were approved, that were developed at Summit, that I would have rather run those two than the one that I had pitched prior, and we seemed to be covering the same ground. So I just said, well, let's kill mine. Like, I'll come up with another one. I know the show. I don't want to lose any of this stuff that the freelancers are giving us, because that helps us. That just keeps us moving. So the outlines, we went to outline. It was like a 5-page document that really got poured over by the creators as well.
Slugged out,
get the details, because I don't like the idea of fun stuff happens being a middle part of an outline, because that's what stops you at draft. It's, I got to come up with that now. And then it's, I don't like that table tennis gag. Something else. I'm like, oh, well, that's 2 pages of rewriting rather than a paragraph of rewriting. But it was a very complex show sometimes. It was ambitious from that standpoint, and it you could tell that there were issues that popped up that every writer instantaneously saw as soon as we saw what we were going to be doing, that nobody else seemed cognizant of. Like, this, as soon as we looked at it, like, this is going to be difficult, and it was a difficult sell sometimes to try to say, this is going to take a bit longer because what we want to do is heavier than what a lot of shows are doing.
Okay, so obviously, draft outline, 5 pages.
Yeah, they came down to that. It was much larger than that initially. They were like 7-page documents. And then it was just the constant sort of, we can get away with less. I think it was most of the people involved had not done 11-minute animation before. Like, the company had not done it. Mark had not, I don't believe, directed Dora or created it before.
Well, Sidekick was 11 minutes.
Todd, yes. Oh, Todd was, right, yeah, okay. So, and I don't think it's because they didn't understand it. I think it was just the trying to get across to everybody that there's no less story in 11 minutes than there is in 22. It's just like you put the bookends on it and you crush it. But there's no less anything there, and it doesn't take any less time. So the placeholder jokes are, you know, you're going to get better at draft. It doesn't all need to be there right away.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you go to first draft, obviously, second draft, polishes. Would you do polishes with the writers?
I did most of the polishes. Yeah. Right. There were some that were, that required, as we went on, especially with writers who had done a few that were just, you know, really great and on tone. So I'm like, well, I can monkey with this. I can overwrite it, but what for?
Right.
But usually if there was something that had to be done at polish, I would, I'd handle those because most of the time it was enough of a chore to get to draft two that I just thought, well, screw it. I'll do those. And that was my way of getting my hands on it. But initially it was a heavy rewrite process for me.
Now, obviously on both shows, all the writers were freelance. Nobody was on any kind of retainer, any weekly, in, and nobody was reading any other scripts. It was just sort of everything was going out other than the summits.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I do wonder, though, with the number of summits that you guys did, the number that we did, with the number of writers we had in the room, if it wouldn't be cheaper and maybe more interesting to do a room for a month with a handful of writers who you know are, you're going to anchor your show around and pay them a weekly and bust most of the series out and do it that way, because you're going to spend the money anyway.
It's an idea that's come up. I know people have talked about it.
Yeah, and it's especially on a show like this, we started to crank them out at one point before we got bogged down with just sort of coming up with something really crazy to do.
Right.
I don't know. Seems like a good idea to me.
Let's watch an episode of Phil's show. Phil, can you tell us anything about the episode we're going to watch? Or
yes, actually, if it's the episode I think it is, it's... It's interesting. It's like a what's that thing that something fish there that when people it's an MTV show, you know, where like people are posed as different people on the internet, catfish. Yeah, basically, it's a catfish episode, which is weird. Where it's
don't give it away. We're gonna
It's right off the bat. Yeah, so it's one of the characters gets lured into a trap by the brainlings.
Now, this is based on something you went through personally, or
yes, it broke my heart. She looked nothing like her profile picture, but then I married her. So there you go. It was better than the profile picture. Yeah, and there you go. And that's the setup.
Fantastic. Thank you. Hear it again for that show for Oh No and Phil. This is great. Fantastic. Good. We can do that. Yeah, let's do it one more time.
And there was the smoke thing. Apparently it works for plants and for sort of brainling lady things.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. You didn't get together.
Oh, though. Totally. We
yeah. We just wanted to come up with one idea we could both use.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Saves, I mean, two different shows.
It's easy thing
why
to do.
Why don't we do that more? Everybody should just get together, pitch like 13 episodes of television, and just all share.
Well, isn't that what we already do, theoretically? be
honest.
Yeah. You just kind of like scratch out. You know,
a lot of food fight episodes.
Voltar, scratch that up.
School Play.
Nate, and there you go. Yeah. Biggest Super Evil and Oh No, kind of just the same episodes.
So let's talk right off the bat about 2D versus 3D, right?
Sure.
3D show, 2D show, limitations, strengths, things that you felt held you back, that you wish you could have done, notes you were getting from production that you had to change.
I mean, we've always done sort of the 3D thing, and what I kind of, when I hear about people working 2D, it's kind of cool because you guys get to do a lot more stuff, or it feels like there's a little bit more, because you're you know, the TV, especially TV for 3D, it gets pricey pretty quickly, so you get limited with what you can do and the scope of things and just in terms of props and characters and locations. So it's a very sort of it can look really cool, but it can, you know, it's also it's a tricky thing.
Can you anticipate that and sort of
I mean, in terms of how the show is going to end up.
Is something that's always difficult or always expensive? Is one thing that's difficult or expensive always like that?
There's just a bunch of stuff you just can't Like, I mean, you just know that, you know, and some stuff, it's not necessarily so, sometimes it's too expensive to do. Sometimes it just looks bad. And I think...
some examples.
Some like water effects can be, I mean, if you've got, that's the thing too, is that we're also competing with like, you know, your Pixar and DreamWorks budget stuff, where kids are kind of used to seeing the CG of that nature. But I find almost like the 2D stuff that you can get with like a GarageBand or Sidekicks or those things. I mean, it just looks clean and nice all the time. It's a really, you know, it's a kind of a nice sub. But to do a lot of stuff that you would see or expect to see in a sort of big budget movie, you just kind of have to sort of stylize your CG for TV. So
why do 3D for this show specifically?
For this, I don't know. I think early on in development, we were Pete and I had sort of planned to do it a 2D show because we. You know, we did League, and now we wanted to do something that was closer to sort of, because Pete's the art director, the designer. He has a really sort of kick-ass drawing style, and he always has to adapt his style to 3D. And then it just kind of came up. I think it was, I have a feeling it was a broadcast decision. I think they just kind of liked what League was doing for them, and they were like, oh, kind of want, you know.
So more this was of kind of a surprise for you?
Yeah, we were sure, we were going to do it in 2D.
Your show is now 3D.
Yeah, I mean, right. it was super early on, it was basically that's the discussion, and it was I think it was interesting because for Neldana, I think we're starting out. I mean, they do a lot of sort of preschool CG, and that was sort of it's a different beast. I mean, there's more action in it. It was a learning experience. I mean, they've done some pretty cool stuff. So
did you have to change aspects of the show? Because if you started with a 2D show, and then at some point. Either Nelvana or the broadcaster YTV came and said, look, it's going to be 3D now. Were you at any point being like, oh, my God, now I have to go back and sort of rethink something?
It was pretty early on. And I think we had sort of a pilot script. And I think that one, when we sort of did the 3D version of it, I think because of sort of the action-heavy elements of it, I didn't feel like it worked quite as well. So we just started to try to get, you know, to get the stories to sort of work on, you know, with what we had. So that makes sense.
Which was a limited sort of, so did you have like sets and props you knew you could use? Obviously you had characters, any sort of limitations. Like people were saying like you could only really have a couple of new characters this episode or
per episode. No, it was first season. I think we were allowed a lot more, but sort of the last sort of batch of episodes we had, it was just, yeah, reuse what we have. And up to a certain point, you kind of, you know, if you always need sort of a guest character to show up to kind of, you know, to write a story around, you're not writing with your main cast. So towards the end, we just couldn't add new stuff.
And really quickly, what are the what was good about doing it in 3D? Like, what were you like, oh, this was the right decision. I'm glad we had 3D for this.
From the writing perspective, it doesn't really change much. I think it kind of opens up certain types of action sequences because you can kind of like, you've got a set, and you can have characters move through this sort of, you know, virtual space. So it's, I think it's more of, it's cooler for probably for the directors because they can make sort of changes on the fly and sort of, you know, decide to change things. Whereas in 2D you have your layout, and that's what you have. Whereas 3D you can sort of take your camera and move it around. And we did a lot of that at Nerdcore when we're doing League of Super Evil. That we would, you know, the directors would, yeah, they'd get a board, but then they'd change things. And I think that sort of freedom to experiment with. Yeah, staging it. Yeah, it's cool.
Mike,
I was not really familiar with a lot of the technical stuff, not being an animator, and what I found, the reason why I asked you the question of was one thing that was hard always hard. We didn't have that situation. Like there would be a moment where we wanted to do a gag of Khan hiding inside Kin's shirt at one point, and we can't really do that, but we can get Khan stuffed into a soup pot that he can bulge out of and then put his legs out of and run away. And to me, it seems like kind of the same thing. And I couldn't really wrap my brain around, no matter how many nosebleeds were induced, I couldn't figure that stuff out. So
more than five.
No, I'm not a rookie. So it was always a bit challenging and confusing to me is try to understand why we can't do that. Things like water effects, obviously. Mm-hmm. Any sort of moving, anything that moves, yes. But why one thing can't be drawn to fit into another thing was always something that kind of just I couldn't quite understand. So I just would sort of take those technical notes. But it was pretty much, you know, not my, or really just not sort of not my department, not my concern for the writing anyway.
Yeah, but were you getting pushback on anything? Sort of like, too many characters in the scene, we can't do this crowd, we can't do that? Like,
sometimes, but I mean, I was aware of that anyway. Like, it's the same thing in live action. Like, you can't have 500 extras for something. I thought, well, you're probably not going to be able to draw 10 additional new characters and do full rotations on them and walk cycles for one line gag. So we're not going to try that anyway. But a lot of times it would just be, you know, the guys were real content to let most of that be left up to them. So if you wrote a scene in an arena, they would board it and structure it in such a way that you never really saw a lot of the detail that was implied. So that kind of got the only thing that really they would... we got pushback on sometimes was action, like too many moving pieces on the screen at the same time. That was pretty
much
it. Do you
have any examples, anything you remember specifically? Or
yeah, there was a racing episode that involved a lot of like full frame kinetic activity with multiple moving vehicles.
Car racing?
Car racing episode. And that required some rejigging of the story in order to make our technical limitations work for it. It was always time. It was just, you can do nearly anything as long as you have the time for it, but that's the one thing that it seems like you never have enough of.
Well, because the time directly equals money in this case.
Yes, exactly.
Specifically, right, because you have the people on crew.
Yep.
So what about the songs in GarageBand? How did that work? Because there's been a history of music and animation for a long time. But specifically in your show, what was the process of that, working with the writers and the musicians?
It was always a concern of mine from the get-go of who's gonna write these and how. Typically, when you have a song like that in a show where you even rely on a music staff to produce it, a lot of that stuff just gets downloaded onto them, and they're not really always familiar with the show and don't really, for that reason, can't always deliver exactly what you're looking for. So I'm not a lyricist. A few people who wrote on the show are actually musicians, which kind of helped. But typically I would just let the writer take a crack at it. If it wasn't working or they weren't comfortable, I typically would do a pass on the lyrics anyway to make them relate more directly to the story. And then that would go off to the music guys, along with an episode brief. I would do like a summary and everything for them.
So wait, so the music, so at this point, you when you break the story, you kind of know where the song's going to go.
Yes.
Which is always going to be near the end of the episode, right?
Always,
always
at the end.
You never flipped it or anything? Or?
No, that's something that, hopefully if there's a season two, that would be one of the things that I really sort of...
Season two, songs at the start.
Well, that was an idea that I kept sort of banging away at. It's like, what happens if, we've got something here and now Trina's gone for the week. We have to use this someplace. You tell a story in a different way that way. It sort of breaks up the structure and you can do more interesting things. But the way it went was always at the end as part of the climax.
So wait, so the writer, you'd have an idea of it. Obviously the song, the outline would be sort of briefed in. It would be like they sing a song about this kind of stuff.
Brief, yeah. But the request, of course, was to have it there at outline.
With lyrics.
No, yeah, right.
The writer would put it in a first draft. It would just actually write the lyrics.
Yep.
What this? So it's a honky tonk song.
Yes,
about.
We'd have the genre. The genre would typically it they got connected. They became more connected as we moved along. But that would be part of the thing. It was a country episode that had a country song that they played
a jug band, I believe.
What's that? Yeah. Well, that was a different one. That was more. They did a jug band tune, which turned out really fun. And that's what we could start with that of, want to do bluegrass. How do we do bluegrass? What does that turn into? This episode was underground music.
So wait, are you saying that that episode, you started knowing the type of music you wanted to do even before the story of the episode?
That can happen. Yeah. That happened a few times of just what kind of music haven't we done? What do we want to do? Is there I love puns. So it was always, is there a pun that we can do? To get us there. Like the sewer thing was underground music, underground equals under the ground. There's a sewer there. Well, there's probably a sewer monster. It was that kind of thing. And that happened with a
handful
of episodes.
Next story.
Yeah, let's break for the sushi that always comes on day one of the summit. Yeah, sushi Thai pizza every time. But then we would have the genre decided on most of the time. We'd have a combination of what Trina was feeling and what Corey sort of needs the song to do. Writer takes a crack at it. Sometimes, not all the time, we wrote lyrics to make them more sort of what we had come up with that the writer wasn't privy to.
But where are you rewriting at this point?
Draft. Usually, there would always be lyrics there that would approximate the amount of time and space we would require. But I would always do my pass, and I eventually sort of went, they're like, we need them, and it's like my eyes are bleeding. They will come at polish, period. So then they would show up at the polish stage where I would finalize the lyrics, and then they would go off to the music guys a little later with a summary of the episode and a bunch of references and whatever.
So wait, you would write up a summary of the episode. They wouldn't just read the draft?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. You can probably ask. Why doesn't somebody do something probably translates to time and money, right? Mm. So it's...
I'm just wondering if they asked, if they were just like, we don't have the time. Can you just summarize that for us? Give us the lyrics.
I don't know. I talked to Graham Cormies I believe, Voodoo Highway. They did the music. The music is amazing. Like, there's a lot of just fantastic songs. There's a sea shanty that's incredible. There's the jug band tune is really cool. There's a lot of fun stuff that we did. And he was saying that normally they don't even get that. They just get, write us a song that kind of does this. And I was surprised to hear him say that what I gave them was a wealth of information. It just sort of seemed, wow, I felt like I was shortchanging you guys.
And did they ever have to, like, sort of rewrite something? Like, where they're oh, you know what, like, you know, this, you know, the cadence or whatever doesn't work
Mike,
out.
These, yes. These two words don't rhyme.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of that. I use the word sandwich a lot. It was actually true. But... I'm not a lyricist, so all I kind of know is math, and so I would just sort of math out whatever kind of structure would work for the type of song that we wanted to do. But then it would go off to them, and of course...
You were going to say shanty there for a second. It sounded like you're...
I really...
Like every song for you is a sea shanty.
That shanty was fantastic, man. It was just so much fun to watch and to write and to listen to. It was really neat. But yeah, they would often rewrite that stuff to turn... you know, math words into music, because I can't do that. Yeah, but they kind of, what we provided them with was generally would average about 50% of what they ended up using.
Right. Before we get off that kind of process for a second, let's just talk also really quickly about length of process, because some shows run faster, and I don't mean that actually the how fast the episode runs, but how fast the actual production runs. So on both of your shows, from green light of a story. So when a premise is approved, because that's sort of when I sort of say the production, like, or work on that episode really starts, to delivery of a final polish with a writer. How many weeks are we looking at? Ideally weeks. I hope it's not days.
I don't know. I don't think of it. Because once you start going, they just kind of come fast and furious, and you kind of lose track. I don't know. It's probably. I should probably ask my producer; she would know. But it's like you write a premise, you wait a week for a couple of days for notes. So yeah, maybe like 2 months, maybe 2 months sounds maybe about right. I don't know, 2-3
months.
Yeah,
from start to finish.
Yeah,
from approval of premise is where I sort of say, because that's when the money comes in. That's when the writer signs. Like, that's when you can start, I think, on the episode.
We were all over the place, like, for in terms of how long each episode took. There were some that kept getting pushed. So our longest one was 2 months from premise approval to delivery of polish. I think one may have even taken longer than that, and some were really quick. Eventually, as the process went on, I really just sort of said, you know, if we're going to do this, we stick to what's contracted for note turnaround. Mm-hmm. You got 2 days. That's what it is. And because if you're sitting with it for five, you inevitably will deliver 5 days worth of notes on something, and then that slows everything down.
Okay, so you're talking about holding the broadcasters, holding any partners on the show to the contracted amount of time for the notes. So
try to, because then the people doing the work get squeezed, which you should never take longer to read something than it took to write it. That's kind of my feeling on it. Mm-hmm. And the last thing you want, which happened to us again and again, is to then, all right, well, we need this now in 4 days. Like, okay, well, I can give you what you want and when you want it are exclusive. So when you want it, I can give you this much of it. It's like, well, we really want all of it. It's like, well, then you're not going to have it in 4 days. Like, because it can't work that way. If it could, I'd have everything for you this afternoon, no matter what it was. So you really have to think about things, which takes some time. But generally, I think on average, it would run about 5 weeks once we really started rolling from premise approval to about 6 weeks polish. Yeah.
Right. Now, did you get pushback from the broadcasters ever? I mean, because I can sort of see a broadcaster saying, like, okay, well, I'll give you notes at the next stage, but I'm just going to save up all the notes I would have given you or the problems and just push them down the road, and you're going to get them at draft two, where really you probably would have liked to have them at draft one.
I conceded that possibility.
Right.
If I'm going to be a bit of a hard ass, I gotta take the hit for that if it blows up in my face, and I'm fine with it. So, and that did happen a couple of times where, oh, we didn't really comment on outline because, you know, we didn't have time. And now we're at draft and we have these issues. And my response was, fine, I'll rewrite this thing. But yeah, that does happen. But most of the time it was fine. What we found were, as we started to roll, everybody kind of thought the same thing. They were on the same page eventually. So you knew what someone was going to, I know Teletoon's going to have an issue with this part of the story. I know Fremantle's going to have a problem here. We will all sort of anticipate that. We'll fix it. And or just generally what we want to do is gonna get us there anyway. So we never really got cooked by that. But I figured I'll take the hit. Like, that's part of the thing. If I'm gonna push, then I'll deal with it.
And that's like a sort of a story editor thing. When you work with, what's nice is when your story editor takes the hit for you. and I think it's almost you. I don't know. I guess you it's kind of your job to take, because it kind of it's not fun as a writer if you come in and you're. Yeah, you're getting sort of nailed by broadcast or by producers or something, and you don't really know because you're not that sort of, like, inside, you know, the day-to-day sort of workings of a show.
Yeah. And everybody gets kicked at some point anyway. Yeah, like, every freelancer gets squeezed it does happen.
Well, let's talk about, we've talked a lot about the good stuff in the shows. We've seen how great they are. Let's talk about some of the bad stuff. Let's talk about what didn't work, what went wrong, what you would have liked to have done differently in the process. Let's start with Phil. Like, what are you sort of like, if I could do that again, I would do it differently, or if I could have a little more time here?
I think it's having more time beyond the script, or even with the script with other people. I think that's because it ends up being just this thing about time, right? And you're just pushing through. So you watch, like, something like that. I'm like, it's cool, but we could have, I think some shows somewhere, they get a chance to watch stuff and then go, like, you know what, this section here, this isn't working, let's try to redo it, whether it's at Leica or at boards or stuff. But even something like this, once you get to a certain stage, it just gets locked in, and then you watch it, you'd be like, oh man, I wish we could just kind of rewrite just this little chunk of something and have like a team of writers show up at second draft, and you kind of have a room of where you read things together, and you're like, you know what, that sounds good on paper. When you read it, it's not that funny. So let's, you got ideas, and get more of that collaborative process beyond the sort of the first, just the idea for the episode. And that'd be cool. And it's a question of time, I think.
So yeah, why not do that?
There's something about this schedule, the sacred schedule. I don't know if it's like a thing that we have in, I mean, it's super important. I mean, I do like schedule because it keeps things regular. But once you start to take extra time down the road, you're still juggling like 7-8 episodes at the same time, and they keep coming and they keep coming. And if you, you almost have to find a time to stop, you know, the production of scripts, look at the ones you have, do sort of a group sort of review, and then kind of keep going. So I don't know, it doesn't feel like it would, because there's always someone waiting for something, right? Like if you're not doing a final draft, or if even second draft, the board artists can't start. Then someone else can't start, so it's really, you kind of feel squeezed. So maybe that's what it is. But I mean, that'd be great, or even just you kind of watch a rough cut of something, and you're like, let's try this one again. This isn't quite working out. But
so what didn't work for you other than schedule on the show? Like what was a really difficult part?
I don't know. I guess yes.
Yeah, or was it easy?
I guess it was painless because, you know, people were kind of, you know, pushing in all the same direction, which was cool. But I think, yeah, sometimes you just, you know, getting things a little tighter, getting things, you know, but these are just kind of sort of, you know, nitpicky things that you sort of see in retrospect. But yeah, I don't know. Just trying to get things tighter. I don't know.
Mike.
That makes sense.
I have personally one, really only one large regret about something that I did that I should have really insisted very strongly that we just stop and wait and I write the first episode that everyone can use to reference the thing. So we get an on-paper representation of what the show is. And because I'd never story edited 11-minute animation before, I was just sort of, I was too, I think, compliant at that initial stage with, okay, let's just go, and we will figure it out as we get sort of a half dozen scripts in. I should have really, really pushed on that point, and it would have been much easier for all the writers involved as well. And as far as what was difficult over everything was the pitch process. As efficient as we were in terms of approvals with the summit, you know, 52 for 54 is pretty cool. The freelancer or non-summit pitches, we had maybe three of those
out of
probably the same number. So I think, well, so we had 49 of, it was a 54 that went off that 52 were approved. But I think 40 of 52 episodes, I think 44 were summit generated. So a lot of people would just pitch to me, and it was you get a combination of no, the show is actually more complicated, or I can't, as everyone who story edits knows, a lot of times you can't take the time to make to turn every pitch into a workable premise on your own when you're juggling everything else. And the issue with this show is it was so difficult to pitch to give everybody the ingredients that they wanted, that it was just impossible to really formulate all those.
The other sneaky one, especially for people that pitch from the outside, it's the repeats. The repeats are just like, it's like,
yeah,
we've done it before. And you can, I mean, and you can sort of give a giant list. I remember once it was Johnny Test or something. And they had like 100 million episodes, and it was really like, if you're trying to pitch on that show, you had to, you know, you need a little bit of guidance to try to say, it's almost like, you can't really say, what have you done before? It's like, well, what are you kind of looking for? And you can, you know, try it, you know, if someone's, you know, freelance pitching on something, so you kind of ask those questions. What are you kind of looking for? You don't really want to say, you know, oh, we need more, you know, we need more brainless episodes, or we need a Shakes episode, or we need,
So what you're both saying, I think, is that it was extremely hard for anyone who wasn't already in one of the summits to get an episode approved and written. Get a premise approved so they could then start writing.
Yes, for GarageBand, definitely, because the show was very difficult to write, at least to pitch for. It was really hard. The repeat thing was a big thing for us, too. There were certain episodes that were pitched a half dozen times in various ways, and it got to the point eventually where it was, I'm going to send you a summary of everything we've done so far.
What's the idea that came up all the time?
There was a...
Birthdays?
A beach party episode was something that I really worked with a couple folks.
Beach boys kind of thing?
No, like a surf rock kind of thing. Yeah. Beach Boys. I just thought you meant, for some reason, I just thought you're like a guys on a beach. I'm like, well, no, there was more to it than that. That's why it was difficult, Simon. just making sandcastles. Why didn't we try that? That would have been great. But that was one where, with a couple people specifically, it was just really trying to get that to work. And then there was, it got to the point where we got close, and it just felt like you feel horrible when that happens. And eventually, you hear, "We don't want to see this anymore." I'm like, okay, but you almost had one, but.
Phil, freelancers on your show.
Yeah.
Were there many approved? Were there any freelancers?
No, there's quite a few.
And by freelancers, I mean people who weren't in the room, who weren't originally picked by you.
I think every season you try to make room for at least, like, I mean, three fresh faces, maybe three or four, and you just try to, you know, you try to see, again, you keep those pitches short so that you don't get them to do too much work before. Yeah, never go to premise unless their springboard gets approved. So
would there be a point where you would tell people to stop? You know, if people were just not this one. How about I just pitch you another? And if they were just a freelance rider,
yeah. You try and you just see what kind of sticks. And usually they'll be like, yeah, just send three springboards. Oh, something there is like usually you. I think you as an editor, you have to kind of get excited about the story and be like ready to fight for it and be like, no, yeah. No matter what, we can do this if we do this way. And,
but at some point, you know, I'm sure you've probably been in this place, both of you, where someone's maybe pitching repeatedly, and you're like, It's not necessarily that they're not a good writer. It just means maybe they're not right for the show. Maybe you're not communicating the show properly. Maybe you don't even have a Bible or a pilot script.
Yeah.
So what point do you sort of say, you know what, I really feel like you're just doing too much work at this point?
The hand from above tends to come down. Usually it's once that's out for approval, once the sort of the broadcaster speaks, you kind of, they're like, not really. And if you're not ready to sort of, you don't have an argument for it, then you can't convince the broadcaster, then it just doesn't go.
I wasn't really good with that. That was, I found it very difficult to tell someone, you just don't get the voice of this thing. I had never been in that position before, so that was something I kind of struggled with, and it's something that I anticipate. Like, if I pitch a handful of things to someone else, and it's just not working, I'll just ask, like, do I know what this is? Do I fit with what you're trying to do here? Because we all like to think we can write anything, but that's probably not the case. And I know that about myself, is that I really struggle with gag-heavy shows. And I just like, maybe I don't fit for this thing. It was much more difficult for me personally to have that conversation with someone of just, it's not working. It's got nothing to do with you, but, I that was difficult for me.
Right, so before we go to Q&A, just just something. Let's just talk about really quickly what was good about finding freelancers. Like, what you would look for. Were you reading scripts? Were agents submitting materials, you guys, for people you hadn't met before? People who weren't in your rooms.
Do you read specs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always want to read a sample. Yeah. Yeah. Unless I know somebody's hilarious, but yeah.
I think it's meeting the writer face to face. Like, number one. Super important. You instantly get a vibe for what that person, and then it's just sometimes you just take a chance. Just send me springboards, and then based off the springboard, if it's funny, if there's a funny idea in there, you're like, okay, let's try it.
To just work with someone even if you haven't seen any of their material before.
If they're new, if there's someone established, like usually if it's like a recommendation, someone knows someone who knows someone, and they've done some work before, I can reference some of the shows they've worked on. I'll take their word for it. But if it's someone brand new, I'll read a Family Guy spec script, or at least the first, like, or Phineas and Ferb thing. You read the first four pages, and if you get the sort of the pace of it, then you're like, okay, cool. They can. You don't need to read the whole thing. Usually, you can kind of get a vibe for it with the first six.
You,
I don't know.
Yeah. Once you get in quick, all right, this person knows what they're doing. And I should clarify that. Yeah, I mean, if someone comes, if I ask somebody for a recommendation, it was like, all right, now prove yourself. Because I don't trust our common friend. No, it was generally if an agent said, "What about this person?" I'm like, great, let me read something.
Yeah, someone you didn't know.
No, yeah, which is interesting because I watched you on the when this happened for Spliced years ago say that you'd never received for a cartoon agency submissions, and I was flabbergasted by that. I'm happy to say that I got a lot of submissions from agents, so it was like agents. Pay attention to animation now, which is pretty cool. I was happy to see that, to get a lot of here are my folks.
That's great. And did you end up using some of those people?
Yeah, for sure. Some folks that I had never worked with before that I thought were funny. And
just based off, you just would take some time, read through the specs, and
the people that I didn't know, and it was generally faster to read the first handful of pages of something than to ask somebody for a recommendation. Yeah.
Any writers for either of your shows who came and submitted themselves to you without agents?
I think some I know some writers that don't have agents, but
sorry, I mean like newer writers.
Yeah, I either met through like animation festivals. I think you got to hit the pavement. Because I was surprised, something like the Auto Animation Festival, is not a lot of writers go there, but when writers do show up and you got story editors there, they're like, wow, great, finally someone that I've never met before. So. And then again, it's also through recommendations. They might not have an agent, but they know someone who's in the business, and then you just give it a shot.
Yeah, very similar, yeah. No one who pitched themselves, but a couple people I hired who did not have representation. Yeah, but no one who said, "Hi, can I pitch to you?"
And that kind of that's sort of sexy. If you're like someone's just like, "Yeah, I mean, I'm starting out," and they're not afraid to sort of, you know, ask, "Hey, you know, I want to do this writing thing." Like,
yes.
You know, can you give me, you know, 5 minutes? And usually, I mean, it's, you know, you'll spend some, you know, we were all there at some point, right? We all started, and you got to wish someone would just tell you, like, well.
What I loved was the question of, I'm a story editor. I'm running this thing right now. Oh, what is it? It's a cartoon about, oh, do you know anybody who does a half-hour comedy that I can get in touch with? I'm like, I don't
really?
Now, asshole. Yeah, it's pretty much like it's a good conversation with this funny individual, and I'm like, I really want to, you know, I want to see something from this person. And then it was ended up then, of course, you know, I'm not a total, you know,
is that
jerk. I let the guy pitch and everything.
Feel, I mean, I haven't.
I'm actually surprised. I mean, like,
what's that?
I'm surprised. No, not you specifically, but if someone comes along and they're not interested in the show, or they're not interested in the genre of the show,
yeah,
off the bat, they sort of turn their nose at it. Do you want them to pitch for your show? Do you want?
My feeling on it was, if your idea is great, I'll overlook that. Like, who cares? But yeah, there was that initial kind of. You're talking to someone. Really, I would never do that. I would never talk to someone who had the potential when I was starting out to hire me and say, pitch me your show. Pitch me the show. I don't know. It's not enough. I like shows about
space.
Maybe
I'll go work on a different show.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know anyone who writes what I love the most? Like, I don't care what the top rung of your ladder is like, Chief. I'm standing right here. And yeah, that was kind of strange. That was a weird conversation. But of course, it's just, dude was funny. So it was, if you can give me something hilarious, I'm not going to, on principle, just say, you need to learn something and I'm going to suffer for it. No. Make my job easy.
Do you get that with, like, is there like a thing with writers that, like, cartoons is just like, it's cartoons. Like, I mean, is that something that, you know, is that like a not a stereotype? Or
some,
I've only done, I mean, I don't know anything else. To me, cartoons is like the best thing ever because it's cartoons, right? But some people might, I guess.
I've seen it, yeah, but it's weird. Like, then somebody writes one, you know, like that. I didn't set out to write cartoons because for some reason it just never occurred to me that I could. And it's fun. And that's what...
Well, you said something to me the other day when we were talking that you thought GarageBand was funnier than anything you could do live action.
Anything that I had... Well, it makes me... By the time we really knew what we were doing, it was making me laugh. The stuff I was reading from the writers was making me laugh at a higher rate than most of the, you know, the live action shows that were being made here. Like, that was kind of the thing. I think it's only because there are certain chances you get to take with a cartoon. There's a level of attention that some people just don't quite pay, or they're looking for different things. I should say there's what's going to spark an angry email. So that's maybe foremost on my mind. And you can do jokes that have just a crazy payoff that might just be a little too odd or impossible for a live action show. But we got to a really weird place, and the scripts were...
And the pace, too, obviously. The pace. You're delivering probably more jokes per minute.
I generally find animation... The funniest show on TV to me right now is Archer, and it's like not even close, really, for what's number two. And I think it's just because, you know, one cartoon person saying something to another cartoon person can be so much more risky and edgy and horrible than you'd see in a live action.
And again, speed, I think, too. Archer runs so fast.
Yeah, but even when it doesn't, it's just, I don't know. It's fun. I don't know why that is, but yeah, the show makes me laugh more than a lot of than most live action shows. I really like that.
Well, let's open it up to Q&A now and see if anybody in the audience has any questions for Mike or Phil. So if you just raise your hand, and then if you say it to me, I will repeat it for the podcast. Oh, and there's a microphone over here, which also is plugging the podcast. So just...
I think because of the earlier show of hands, most of these folks know everything we were already talking
about. They
already
know everything.
Yeah.
No, any question? Oh, there's a question. From Rob.
A lot of people ask about the notes process, and it's, of course, it's harder the more people are involved and the more people you're getting notes from. But I find it interesting that you were taking notes from Cartoon Network through Fremantle and didn't have that direct access. Did you find that they were changing the notes a little, or was he just kind of including his comments with the one he was putting forward?
The notes didn't really change. What he did, which was actually kind of helpful, was because we were already a certain amount of the way through the production schedule, he kind of filtered out the notes that he knew we wouldn't be able to address. Like, it's a creative note halfway through the process after draft one that, well, shouldn't the episode really be about something else? He would, and so that's, we can't do that. He would then streamline a lot of stuff. So I think the Cartoon Network notes that came through were brief and not short, but just sort of very to the point and more creative. And then he kind of he filtered out a lot of the just sort of creative opinions and got down to what do you need addressed, less wish list stuff, which might have polluted the process. I mean, I don't know. You got to be open to that sort of thing because everybody in their own way wants to make the show better. So you listen to everything, of course, but what he did, I think, was sort of filter out some of the material that would have been maybe more time consuming to address. Yeah, but nothing important was ever omitted. It was really helpful, actually, for him to do that.
Phil, anything that came in late in any notes that came in late that were huge problems or anything?
No,
like that?
No, actually, we were good. I mean, usually late stuff is just legal things, like if you've got, you know, trademark names and stuff. But I mean, no, yeah. we were everything was up front, and the broadcaster was timely and efficient with notes, which was really weird and great. It was amazing. It was fun. So,
nice. Excellent. We have one over here first.
How long is your work day, and do you like to see if you can get a day off in a week? What do you guys do for that?
Your process to this point has just seemed like there just the rainbows everywhere, and just so much candy. So you, please make me even
lots,
more envious.
Lots of
Let's
candy.
Start with heaven, and then we'll go somewhere else.
no, I mean. Yeah, I mean, I like to do the 9 to 5, as structured as possible. Again, we did have a really sort of good schedule and lead up, so we there was never a big crunch to like, oh, you need to write this episode like tonight to get it tomorrow to the voice record. So we were generally good. Yeah, 9 to 5. I mean, that's kind of like what I like to do, especially if you work from home, man. You just If you start to go over, then it just you know, I got to make sure to be nice to my wife, I guess. And so 9 to 5, and then yeah, if I can, you know, now yeah, it all depends on what's going on. But yes, sometimes you get the odd maybe a couple of hours on a Friday, maybe. But
wait, a couple hours on a Friday?
Yeah, Friday afternoon kind of thing. Maybe if
you don't work Fridays.
Maybe. No, I work all day Friday. But you know, if you can, you know, quit at 4 on a Friday, that might.
Oh,
be
the occasional
so
Friday
would
be till, you'd be quitting early.
Working till 5 on a Friday was
yeah.
a long day.
No, that right, sounded okay. Like a yeah. No.
I mentioned that was really funny to hit a dude with a shovel earlier, right?
Yeah.
I hold none of this against you.
Yeah. I mean, it's happened that. I mean, it's. Does everyone work weekends? Was that no?
Okay, we have someone in the audience.
Yeah, they
So let me repeat that. Yeah, so Craig Martin in the audience is
yes,
he's claiming that your writing schedule was or your production schedule was extremely long.
Well,
remember when
I was talking about the green light, and said we had the writers' room before the green light. What was cool about that is by the time that we were greenlit and the schedule started, for real, officially started, which again was weird, we had already like 11 scripts almost, like, you know, in various stages. Like, yeah, we had probably like 4 or 5 that were like, they were done.
I'm not saying everybody's looking at you murderously.
I know, yeah. It's no, there's weekends, yeah, for sure. I mean, I just don't.
Point, counterpoint.
Yeah.
No pressure.
There
good,
were 2 days and 12 months where I did not work. You said you start at 9. What was the second number that you said? 5?
Well, hopefully 5, yeah.
That 5, that's the same day's 5, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't the following day's 5. Yeah, it was very, very long days. We had initially a long production schedule, but we had gone through the first summit and broken story before the concept was rejigged.
Right.
So any extra time that we had was just chainsawed by me going back and the writers going back and, okay, let's take, like, you know, 8 developed stories and turn them into this framework. And by that point, we were kind of taking a little bit more time with the notes and trying to get what the vision of the show was concrete. And we were slipping a little further behind, and no one ever mentioned it. So, like, we had the script delivery schedule, but even then it was, do we have this extra day? Like, yes, okay, what now, when do we need to deliver these things? Because they're taking longer than anyone anticipated. And then I would get an accurate answer. But it turned out that was only happening because production had slowed down a bit. So then the script delays had kind of built up. But generally, because it was season one on the show with an initial creative vision that was not realized on paper, that was then altered. And then there were so many balls in the air when you're doing 52 episodes, and because you're managing at any one time on a good day a half dozen stories at a time. The days turned into like solid 12 hours. Really consistently, and there wasn't really a weekend where work didn't occur because it was really what you want when you want it. They are exclusive, and that was not something that that was, you know, heated.
You know what, though? In my defense for the such when we did League of Super Evil, that was you know, the first one.
Don't feel like you have to make
it. Yeah, I know.
Story.
I have to.
Yeah, no,
I was really hard too. No, it was yeah, I mean, that was different, but I think what we set off at the get-go on this show was you know, schedule as tight and as efficient as possible, cuz it drives you nuts, especially when it's not it's the schedule. I think that's what turns, yeah, the 12-hour days, and it is a sort of easy thing to, in theory, easy thing to fix if your schedule is right. You look at it; it makes sense. Yeah. We still deliver one episode a week, kind of thing. But, and people were just on time with their notes, so it was like quick, so we could just keep things moving. So
let's just talk for one quick second. So you for your first 26,
yeah,
how long in total time were you employed to do those 26?
I don't remember, because we went straight from, we were wrapping up the 26th or the 26th half hour, and we were already starting to ramp up the following batch. Right. So, I don't know. I'd have to look at.
So,
it's kind of a blur.
To do the 40 then, to do the whole 40.
Yeah.
And what is, a year and a half, 2 years?
Oh, no, yeah. We were wrapping up now, and then, I don't know, we probably started around 2000 and, I want to say 11 or 12, so it must have been two years.
Right.
So yeah, and again with sort of an air date that just started, we just started airing now. So at first it was a little compressed, but then eventually we kind of got the breathing room, right? So.
And Mike, what was your run on the show just in time?
13 months.
13 months.
Yeah, which was a couple months longer than anticipated or intended.
Than the schedule was. So in those 13 months, you put out 52 quarter-hour episodes.
Yeah, 52 quarter-hours.
26 half-hour episodes.
Yep.
52 individual stories.
Yeah.
Right. And just a quick follow-up question on this. When you guys aren't on a show, what's your work day like then?
I don't know. It's all kind of gone from one to another. And usually, you know, the stuff that does sort of happen on weekends and on evenings is working on the next.
Sorry. Oh, Pete, I'm just going to, for the podcast, people in the audience, again, are looking eagerly at.
Well, but that's when all the new stuff, you have to put it on weekends and evenings, and when you're kind of trying to tee up your next sort of series.
I'm just thinking, sorry to interrupt, barely. What's funny to me is that the longest line recently at the TIFF Lightbox will be your murder line,
yeah,
of people just waiting to stick it in, break off the handle, and leave you. You'll have the very long schedule to remove the blade.
Yeah.
It might not be urgent, but that sounds great.
You'll get notes on it, though. Right?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I would have taken it out like that. I would have turned and then pulled it out.
Does this have to be a story? Yeah. I suppose not.
Mike, when you're not on a show.
I write until I think, man, I'm no good at this, and then I stop.
Is that 10 minutes?
At 10 minutes, it's like, you're probably no good at this. And then 3 hours later, it becomes, stop what you're doing. And it generally, if I'm working on my own, if I'm not actually writing for someone, they're about like 4 or 5 hours a day, because I can't stare at my own thoughts for that long. If you're on deadline, you can kind of grind it out, but it's, looking at my own stuff for longer than that, just kind of, I don't know.
But are you both always working on something? Are you sort of like, you know what, I'm off a show, I'm not going to worry about anything for a while until another gig comes up, or am I going to, you know, try and do something original, try and come up with a new show idea, work on a spec?
I mean, first starting out, there was that sort of period of, you know, drought, you know, after doing the first bunch of episodes, and then you kind of wait, and you're like, oh, great, I got, like, you know, 4 months off, that's amazing, and you don't look for work during that 4 months, and then after the 4 months are up and your bank account is kind of like at, you know, $3, say, for example, you start to realize, and then you start looking for work, and you realize that when you start to look for a gig, it takes really a long time before even that first paycheck comes in. So after that, I was like, oh, man, this is not fun. So like, the worst part
the
of the job.
4 month vacations got.
I mean, yeah. Now right. I don't know that now they don't exist anymore. But it just the worst part about the job was just like the kind of the waiting around part. So I'm like, well, you know, the job's fun. It's cool. Like writing is a fun thing to do. So, and you just try to keep going, I guess.
I think we have another question.
This question's for Phil. I'm curious with this show, when you were pitching it initially, I'm just curious where the initial concept came from and how it maybe evolved, and if there was anything particular with this show about how you developed the pitch documents.
Well, I mean, the show turned out, I think, younger than what we had initially wanted or would have liked. I mean, and it's fine, and that's kind of the... But the initial pitch was... it was me and Peter, we sat around and we're like, I don't know. I think it was a very kind of organic thing. We're like, what could be fun? What's fun? Okay, no parents. Living in a mall. Yeah, that's cool. That's kind of what, you know, it's a very sort of informal thing. So the idea was always, it's aliens show up. There's no grown-ups and kids live in a mall. And then it was just trying to figure out how does that kind of turn into a show? And then it was like, oh, okay, well, the aliens aren't mean. They're kind of like dumb and fun and silly and stuff. And then that kind of just, kind of worked out. So it wasn't super dark and creepy like our original version, which would have probably felt like a, you know, one of those like East German sort of films of like, the world is awful and aliens and all of that. That sounds more French than German, but yeah.
That could be your next show.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think we have time for maybe one more question. I think we've gone over. If there's anybody else, with a question, way at the back, just there. Let's make it a quick one. Yes or no? No, I'm kidding.
Yes. I was wondering if you could each give an example of something that we saw that was a joke that came from the board rather than in the script, if there was anything.
So a place where you guys weren't involved in making the show funny, basically. So,
is there anything like that?
It was all you.
No, I'm trying to think of the episodes that we just saw. As opposed to, there were some great moments, and not just a bored, like visual gags, but some really solid jokes that came out of nowhere. There was one in particular that I really quite liked, in an episode where, Trina's soul gets trapped in her car. It's our Christine episode. And there's an entire sequence, regarding, her driving into the garage and scattering everyone, and what happens, you know, someone gets stuck on the windshield, and she sort of wipes them off, and then she's got this really kind of neat dialogue run that just came out of nowhere, that really made me laugh a lot. Like, there are tiny bits, but generally, for me anyway, I forget. By the time I see this thing, it's, you know, months later usually, so I'm kind of I don't know, my brain is mush, so I've moved on to something else. But they're always there. There's some really good stuff.
Physical stuff. I mean, like stuff that you just can't like that. Sometimes you'll write like a character looks at a character in a funny way. I mean, that's what's funny. It's like trying to sometimes write, you know, like Adventure Time. If you're trying to picture how you know a script of that would look like. Sometimes like Finn makes a funny face, and it sounds boring on paper, but you see on screen. So something like that. I mean, I liked what they did with that sort of the weird lady brainling thing and all her, like the way she shakes his hand and the way she keeps doing all those weird gargly noises. Yeah, that, I mean, that was kind of like, you know, in the script at some sort of description of it, but then they just made it cool.
There was actually one thing that does stand out. There was one joke that I had written there. They're trying to make a music video, and the line was something like when Ken is talking about how it's really important to use someone's booty when you're making a music video, and he said the key with booty is to make it go pow. And that was all of my joke. Like, I thought, what more does a man need than to make that joke? And they did, like, this short musical sequence of, you know, like, with the guys dancing around, booty, booty, pow, pow, booty, booty, pow, and then, like, kind of shaking their bottoms, that I found hysterically funny. And that was just apparently just, you know, like a one frame of him with kind of half his underpants exposed. That then turned into a musical gag, which happened a lot on this show. That was crazy. You just burst out laughing seeing that. That's great.
Mike, Phil, thank you so much for
coming up here tonight. Thanks, guys.
Can we get some applause for the staff here, too? We've gone way over. Thank you so much, Tiff Lightbox, for having us. Thank you to YTV, to Chorus, to the Writers Guild of Canada for sponsoring this and putting this on, and for all of you who came out. So thank you again. If you've enjoyed the show, we'd love it if you'd log into iTunes and leave us some positive feedback. Special thanks to TIFF, Bell Lightbox, Nelvana, Fresh TV, Teletoon, and YTV. This podcast is sponsored by the Writers Guild of Canada. The show's technical producer is Philip Vukovic, and I'm Simon Rasiova. Thanks for listening.